Page 151 of Book 2, The Ladies of Pagodaville. The conversation between Lorna and Doreen. Lorna cut her off and said matter-of-factly, "While you were busy running from relationships and hardships, I was busy running in place. I hurt a lot of people, too. I compared everyone to Jeannie, and no one measured up. Not a one. And you know what? All the smarts and logic kept me a prisoner, a hostage, just like your family status kept you." Doreen nodded. "Okay," Lorna continued. "It wasn't until I bought the motel last year that I was finally able to be the person I've kept hidden while growing up. Just because you and I have different backgrounds doesn't mean we didn't share the shame and misunderstanding while growing up. I, too, endured the expectations of being someone my parents thought I should be instead of who I was in my heart." "Go on." "I saw my parents' wealth as a badge that they could use to dictate what I was going to do in my life. Keyword, my." Lorna narrowed her eyebrows and spoke with rancor. "Be the perfect well-adjusted daughter, get high, consistent high grades, have the right friends, be on all the school committees and teams, date the right boys, go to all the right parties, go to my father's alma mater, become a lawyer. So, when my dad died, it was as if a locked door flew open and yanked me through." "And?" She lowered her voice and found a gentler tone. "I did. I left the only home I had ever known, the only job I'd had since my mid-20s, and bought the motel. I put all my eggs into one basket and went for it. Really, there was no other way."
So, Ellen, you've got two books so far, but I get the sense from what you've put in these books that there are many more coming?
Well, I don't know how many, but definitely, definitely a follow-up on here to, you know, flesh out all the new characters and give them a life of their own. And also, you know, the beginning of the 1980s was the introduction publicly of the AIDS epidemic. And I want to start bringing some social events into the book, because I really, in book one and two, there's really not a lot of that. And there's no political stuff, which I will continue to do. No political stuff, but there's very little touch with the outer world, and I think I would like to start integrating the reality of the early 80s into the next book.
Can you give us a synopsis to entice our listeners to pick these books up of what's in both books, because you have two out right now, and maybe tell us a little bit about the characters that you've developed?
Well, you know, let me back up just a little bit. The premise for this story is actually true. Many years ago, I went to visit some friends down in St. Augustine, and they lived over the Intracoastal on this little dooney island. They had a little place that they went for the winter, and next door to them was this sort of beat-up motel that was in shambles. And, you know, I was kind of walking around asking about it, and one of the owners said, "Well, you know, many years ago, a gal from the big city, didn't say which one, a lawyer, came down and she wanted to invite all of her lesbian friends to come down and have a big, you know, live-in love fest," which, you know, her friends came down in their VW buses and didn't even stay in the cabins, which were falling apart anyway, and they ended up leaving. So the whole thing tanked. There was only so much love and peyote go around. So her friends took off, but I was walking around the property and thinking, well, what if it worked? You know, what if somebody with forward thinking came down here and turned this place into a little gold mine? So that's when the story sort of started to get developed in my head. And this is many years ago, and there are several iterations of the first book, and those are in a file cabinet somewhere in some dark, dank basement. So, you know, the idea was to have this, this lawyer disgruntled with her life, tired of her life, tired of living two lives, take something on a whim. You know, here's this pragmatic lawyer who thinks things out from A to Z and doesn't move until she has all the facts. And her father dies unexpectedly, and she says, "Well, I think it's time for me to make this move." And her friend Avril is like, "Are you crazy? You're nuts. You're having a midlife crisis. You're having menstrual issues. Just stay home, you know." And she said, "No, I'm going to do this." So, you know, she just goes down and sees this property, buys it sight unseen, goes down for the inspection, thinks that she may have made a grave error, but meets all these really great people and goes with it. So I think mostly what this is about is reinvention. You know, I've been reinventing my life my whole life, and some to good results and some to no avail. And I think it's also about braving a change. I think we grow up in one way, and we listen to our parents, and we listen to our role models, and we think we have to be a certain way, but we know deep down in our hearts that we aren't. So this particular character, who has closed her heart to love because she had this fabulous love in high school and very deep and very poignant and life-changing, and then that just ended abruptly, and so she closed her heart off and just kind of went about her life. And here she's motel with this new idea to make it a landing pad for musicians, artists, and writers to hone their craft, to get out there in the world and be who they are. Lorna always had a like for what her mother calls the bohemians. And so she split her life down the middle. She had her wealthy home life and school and everything else, but she also had this other life that she wanted to live more than anything. And so the motel represented that avenue for her to reinvent herself.
I'm wondering, too, if you started this however many years ago, growing up and finding out about your own identity, did you find that there was a lacking of lesbian main characters in books and literature?
Yeah, you know, I didn't really start getting into that until I moved to Boston, and that was back in 1978, and I found this bookstore called New Words Bookstore. It was in Somerville. It was a very, had strong lesbian titles, mostly from NIAID Press, when NIAID was really, was really bringing in the good writers and so on and so forth. Of course, who doesn't remember Ruby Fruit Jungle, and Alice in Bechtel. So there were all these great writers that started saying, hey, this is our life and we've lived this life. For me, I just didn't think that way until I met my love of my life, mm-hmm. whose name I won't say, but she changed my world. She rocked my world. She opened me up to so many things, and music and literature and arts, and it did end abruptly, and it was heart-wrenching. It was awful. And so I really closed off and thought, you know what? Screw it. So I went to college.
So there's a little bit of Lorna in you, or vice versa.
Yes, okay. Definitely. There was definitely some resignation there. Yeah, it's just too hard. I'm never going to find this kind of love again. And so I went to college and did my thing. And then when I moved to Boston, I saw women walking down the street holding hands, arm in arm. I was like, whoa, where have I been? You know, I was born and raised in Cleveland in the suburbs and went to school at Ohio University down there in the foothills of the Appalachian. And the gay lifestyle at Ohio University was very closeted at that time. So there were like these really deep pocketed areas that you kind of had to go down dark alleys to find. And then when I moved to Boston, it was like, oh my God, this is real. So of course, I just fed my hunger for literature and reading writers. I mean, Catherine B. Forrest back then. Just so many women writers who were out there, and there were sort of these paradigm pioneers that were paving the way for the lesbian genre, and also filmmakers like Nicole Kahn. Come on, Claire of the Moon. Who hasn't seen Claire of the Moon? You know, that was another great breakout film for lesbians back in the 80s.
Did you yourself start Smiling Dog Publications, or I kind of figure that was yours?
Yeah. It is my partner, my soon to be spouse, and I. We developed the publications for self-publishing. And the whole thing about self-publishing is, yes, you have complete editorial freedom and you don't have to write into specific holes and squares and pegs and whatnot. But the problem with self-publishing is marketing. And I don't have...
That's usually the big crack problem. In the sidewalk that people fall through.
Yeah, and it is. And so getting the story out there, but I've made some great connections over the last year, and I have another work in progress that is not Godeville based. It's a very different kind of story that I will be seeking agent representation for over the next year.
Story or collection of stories?
It's a novel from a short story that I wrote, and it's a very, very different story. You know, Pagodaville for me is a lark. You know, it's a yarn. It's fun. It's crazy characters. It's, you know, a little bit of mafia thrown in, a little bit of, you know, like this hardcore hot woman that comes in from nowhere and blows into town and steals Luna's heart. You know, it's just, it's a yarn. There's not a lot of big sex scenes. There's not a lot of political stuff. There's no political stuff in it. And it's more about, again, sort of this, hey, let's give this a whirl and see what comes up. And she meets these fabulous Mexican characters who become her family. But, of course, there has to be an arc in every story. So I decided that maybe an old murder thrown in, you know, something that ties the Mexican family together with the reason that Doreen comes to the motel in the first place from book one. And, of course, Lorna, this is all unexpected in Lorna's life. And she just, you know, she just runs with it and says, okay, this is what I've got here and this is what I'm going to work with. And I'm just going to make it happen.
Did you know when you were starting out that this was going to be a series versus one novel, or did that just kind of develop that way?
Well, I think I kind of knew because I didn't think I could do it all in one story. To me, it didn't make sense. I was kind of thinking of, and I wouldn't even compare myself to him, but Tales of the City, you know, this sort of wonderful. This just wonderful carved out story in San Francisco that just kept going. And you just wanted to read more about these characters. You wanted to see them grow. So I thought maybe that would be a good thing to do with this series, to build these characters and give them a life of their own and give them chapters of their own and books of their own. So started with Lorna and then it just kind of continued to blossom. But I felt that a series would give them a lot more room to breathe and to blossom.
And you have a Harley in there. Doreen rides in on a Harley. And I was reading a little bit about your own biography. You're a bike rider, too.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. It was a midlife crisis, and I bought my Harley 2 years ago. It's a trike. I've ridden two wheels most of my life, but my balance is getting so that, you know, I need to have my feet planted a little differently. But I love that thing. It is just like, it is wind therapy that you just, you know, granted I'll be paying for it for the rest of my life, but it is just, it. I don't know. I get on that thing and I just can't explain, the endorphins just kick in and I'm on the road. And I'm also a part of a very strong Ladies of Harley chapter out of Battle Creek, Michigan. And we are just an amazing sisterhood. I've never met people like them.
So you ride together in places?
We ride together, but more so we're together all year. You know, we do all kinds of things during the year, even COVID. You know, we had our Zoom meetings through COVID, and now we're kind of branching out a little bit and getting back together. And we're actually doing a meeting next month at a place called That 70s House. And it's 4,000 square feet, and all the rooms are from the 70s. So it's going to be an absolute blast.
Speaking of marketing and the challenges of being self-published, and as you just talked about your group there meeting on Zoom, how are you handling marketing in this wonderful time of COVID, quote unquote? I understand you had an event planned and that probably, I'm guessing, fell apart because of COVID. Are you planning some kind of virtual events or readings, or how are you handling all that?
Well, that's a great question. Yes, the event was going to be an amazing event, and we were looking at a guest list of over 100. And of course, the City of Parchment decided that it just was not going to hold any outdoor events at all, so they canceled it.
Yeah,
I understand it completely. But what I'm also doing now is I'm working with some local actors, and we are doing a audiobook, which will be a radio play of book two. So I'm writing the audio script, and we should have it done by middle to late 2021. And we're going to have sort of another release at that time. And, you know, when people can start to gather, we'll call the band and we'll call the food trucks back and we'll say, hey, listen, we've got this new thing coming out, and hopefully sell the CDs or give them offer some freebies. I go through Findaway Voices, which has 21 audio platforms that people can buy the audiobook, not just Audible. which is, of course, the largest platform, but there are still people that use these other audio platforms. So book one was recorded by Rebecca Roberts. She was from Florida, and so that one had some sales, but I think book two, the radio play, is going to be so unique and so original and so different.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I believe that we can get some nice sales out of that. Look, I'm not looking to pay rent from the sale of the book and the audio book. I think that if I can get this other book project that I'm working on, get some agent interest in it, and go mainstream, it would be a different story. But the Pagodaville stuff is locally, I've got a lot of people that have bought the books, who have read it and enjoyed it and handed it to friends. It's just getting into bookstores right now to do readings is very difficult because it's just really hard to get in the door, number one, being self-published, and number two, just with COVID and what they're thinking they want to
do
and select their public appearance things and stuff like that.
Well, you're doing a pretty good job so far from what I can tell, in promoting yourself. So good luck on that. And appreciate your stopping by, Ellen, to talk to us about your books. And we'll keep an eye out for book three and whatever other short story-based books you have coming out.
Well, thank you very much, Cynthia. I appreciate it. It was great talking to you as well.